While lawmakers debate a funding bill, federal employees are learning what could happen to them next week if there's a government shutdown. Are they essential enough to keep coming to work, even though they might not be paid on time or at all? Now, we have to go back to 1995 and 96 for some historical perspective. That was when the federal government shut down for 28 days. Frank Reeder was director of the Office of Administration at the White House at the time, and he joins us now with this look back. Hi, Frank.
Good morning, Emily. How are you?
Fine, thanks. So now, with years and years of hindsight, we're asking you to recall that shutdown. What was the hardest thing you remember about managing it?
The hardest thing, of course, was telling people that, and the word is, I think, a horrible one, that they were not essential. And as you said at the top of the segment, essential really means not accepted from the Anti-Deficiency Act, really not whether they are mission essential.
So it was a people issue mainly, and how did it go over? I mean, how did people react? As I recall, people were pretty bummed out by not going to work.
Mixed reaction. Obviously, some were very bummed out. Others were saying, in anticipation of being paid, a question that probably is worth exploring, gee, it's a paid vacation. I get time off, and I'm likely to be paid for it. So the reactions were at both ends.
What do you think the biggest lessons from that time were that could apply to what we might see next week?
Biggest lessons. First, to understand that being told not to come to work doesn't mean that you are not important to the agency's mission. Again, your quote at the head of the segment, I think, was exactly right. The definition of those who are permitted to come to work, who are permitted to work, or in fact required to work during that week, is based on a very legalistic interpretation of what the Anti-Deficiency Act says, not whether you are important to the agency.
Now, during the recent furloughs, the people that ended up being furloughed did not get their money. So actually, Congress, if I'm correct, is not obligated to pay people back if they are furloughed because of a shutdown. So, and we haven't really heard one way or the other, so maybe it's going to be a little bit more one-sided this time.
Tom, you're absolutely right, and I think that's important. And while I hesitate to make predictions about the political process, history may not be instructive here. While in the past, employees who were asked not to come to work because of a shutdown were made whole, I'm not sure in the current climate that that's going to occur. So one shouldn't assume that one will be paid.
Do you remember the burden that was placed on those who, in fact, were deemed essential during those 28 days? What sort of things did they have to do in their work life just so this government could remain functional in some respects?
Well, and again, it varied, obviously, from agency to agency. In the White House, it was largely a matter of working on things related to bringing the government back up again. The White House is a peculiar place in that respect, supporting the chief executive. In other places, I suspect, and this is secondhand experience, that it was pretty much business as usual. If you were, for example, in operations that involved issuing Social Security payments, you issued Social Security payments and you did your, it was business as usual.
Now, in the intervening years, you've spent a lot of time doing cybersecurity research and looking at cybersecurity programs. And that's not that far from the operational aspect of agencies, which have critical systems that have to be protected, even if they're sort of idling, because no one's working with them. What should people do to prepare to make sure that they don't get cyber breaches and other types of similar damage, even though the systems may not be used hourly during a shutdown?
Great question. The two-part answer. One is, and again, I would caveat this by saying that I am not a lawyer and didn't stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night, and I have no special inside information. But my reading of the law is first that that cybersecurity would fall under the heading of protecting life and property, so that the activities related to protecting cyber assets should be no different than protecting physical assets or protecting people. And in that respect, the staff related to and the work related to protecting cyber assets would be accepted under the Justice or the Attorney General's interpretation of the Anti-Deficiency Act. Second, and here I'm on even thinner ice, to some degree the threat goes down because a lot of the agency's cyber activities that are not in support of accepted activities would have to be shut down. So in essence, in a way, it's like closing the bank. It's a whole lot easier to protect the bank if the doors are locked than if you have customers walking in every day.
We're speaking with Frank Reeder. He's president of the Reeder Group, and he served as director of the Office of Administration at the White House during the 1995-96 shutdown. Frank, I mean, you mentioned cybersecurity. We know that technology has changed since then. What do you think are going to be the major differences if there is a shutdown next week compared with that experience you lived through?
Well, one will be, for example, all of the, hesitate to use the term, but it's a useful term here, gadgets and toys that folks have, they won't be permitted to use unless they're performing what is considered to be an accepted activity. Employees need to remember that under the Anti-Deficiency Act, you can't volunteer. You can't stay connected to the office if you are not performing an activity that is accepted. So this notion that people can work remotely and stay connected and are always on takes on a very different flavor. And it'll be interesting to see. First, I hope we don't go through this, but if indeed we do, what the impact is on human behavior and agency operations.
Yeah, what fun is going to Starbucks in the morning if you can't peck away on your smartphone while you're doing it, I guess.
It'll have to be your personal smartphone, Tom.
Right. And relative to 1995-96, of course, there's a lot more federal services offered to the public online than there were back then. And so, therefore, the systems maintenance and cyber issues become a matter of the public access. Do you anticipate that public access to online applications, online services of the federal government would still operate, or would people get a, you know, error 404 when they went to try something online?
Well, first, I hope there's no error 404 and that to the extent that services are shut down, folks, I think, put up banners and other things on the site that indicate what is going on. The Anti-Deficiency Act language and the Attorney General's memos are pretty loose in that they allow a great deal of discretion. And in the 95-96 shutdown, early on, as I understand it, Medicare exam applications were not accepted. That is the modern equivalent or the equivalent then of a 404 exception. Today, later on during the shutdown, that determination was reversed and they began accepting applications. So it's unclear what will happen in particular cases, but I would anticipate, particularly if it goes on more than a couple of days, that those sorts of public-facing services would be required to shut down.
Frank, looking back again 20 years ago, I mean, it's one thing to say that the government is going to shut down for a day or 2 days, but 28 days, a really long time. Do you remember how quickly did the government bounce back from that after people were allowed to come back to work?
Again, I'm sure it varied agency by agency, and in the 18-acre compound, things bounced back pretty quickly, in part because those operations are of a different nature, and second, I sense, and I suspect we saw it in a lot of agencies as well, a lot of energy from folks coming back.
All right, Frank Reeder is president of the Reeder Group. Thanks so much for joining us.
A pleasure as always. Thanks, Tom. Thanks, Emily.